Primetime Sports is brought to you by Bodog.net. Join Bodog today.
To him, titles don't matter. VP, CEO, GM. He's never afraid to call BS. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Thursday, January 31st, the last and final day of the month of January. Thank the baby Jesus. Hate January. Least favorite month of the year. 2013. I'm Bob McCown. This is Primetime Sports. Later on the program, Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated, Mike Sunnicks of the Phoenix Business Journal. Why not, right? Keep running that play till you get it right. Our legal analyst, Rob Becker from New York. Rapportors President and Managing General Brian Colangelo, Don Banks of Sports Illustrated from the Super Bowl, and Brad Fritch, PGA Tour member, who we bumped yesterday. Our apologies for that. We just ran out of time. He will join us today. Of course, the news, I guess the biggest news in this area in terms of sports, any sport, would still be the Raptors trading for Rudy Gay with the Memphis Grizzlies. And here to talk a bit about it is our good pal, former coach, NBA analyst, Butch Carter. Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Good, Bob. How are you today?
It's all right. Hanging in. Rudy Gay, a very expensive player, paid like a superstar, but is he? There's a question.
Well, it's pretty simple. We've seen Howard trade, and you know the superstar, so-called superstar trades, normally work if the guy is motivated in his new home and he's healthy.
Okay.
Right. Philadelphia has a center that hadn't played all year. It's supposed to be a great trade. You know, Howard gets traded with his back bad and now his shoulder bad. So, you know, when you've had me on before, I've talked about, you know, when do the Raptors decide if they're a large market team or a small market team? This right. trade, to me, identifies a large market team taking advantage of a small market team. No different than what our Blue Jays did.
Okay, I'll buy that, Coach. Here's the question that bothers me.
Yep.
If I had a guy worthy of $17, $18, $19 million in salary, and there are only a handful of those guys in the National Basketball Association, relatively speaking, and they're all supposed to be franchise players and they're all supposed to be studs, and I've got a team that I think might be able to make some noise in the postseason, like I think I got a chance. I don't know how great a chance, but I'm Memphis. I think I've got a chance. Why am I trading Rudy Gay?
They're trading Rudy Gay because they can't afford him. I mean, they basically can't afford him. They're a small market team, and by the time they add up their TV revenues and their cable revenues, you know, they basically cannot afford him. And the other part of it is they've lived with him for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years now, and there may be something about that living together that they don't like. So, you know, they played very well, you know, in the playoffs without him.
Right.
But, you know, you're going to get some warts, too. You know, that's just the nature of the beast. But Memphis has gone through the trials and tribulations since Heisley, you know, moved him from Vancouver to Memphis. And I thought Rudy Gay was right on the second tier when those guys were working out with the Olympic team. I think it really helped him tremendously. And I think that if someone can motivate him and get him in, you know, great condition, I think he's going to be very good. I'm hoping he's going to be very good.
Go ahead, finish.
But it's typical of, you know, what a large market team should be able to do, exploit those small market teams when they've got a guy that they've grossly overpaid. And then they decide, well, not only did we go overpaid him, but, you know, we don't love him as much as we used to.
And so just to paraphrase, you don't seem to be as cautious slash nervous about this move as I am.
No, you know, I think at the end of the day, you've upgraded your talent. If the guy's healthy.
Sure.
Right? You've upgraded your talent. You've created a problem because now you've got a lot of duplication. But, you know, I worked out my duplication with Doug Christie, Trace McGrady, and Vince Carter, you know, to the benefit of the team.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, so, you know, that's what has to happen, you know. The coach is going to have to modify his behavior to take this player, and his job is to make him successful for the benefit of the team. So, you know, I mean, do you sit upstairs and say, well, you know, I think the bigger issue is you've lost Jose, and is Lowry going to be healthy? Because if he's not healthy, you know, then you end up with what you ended up with last night. You got your third point guard taking a shot at the end of the game, you know, that he shouldn't even be in that position.
Does this maybe not mandate, but suggest another shoe to drop either in the next month or so or during the off season?
Well, I think Colangelo's in the batter's box, and if he's allowed to swing, he's going to swing. And, you know, if he keeps swinging like this into, you know, to upgrade the talent, you know, it is what it is. I just think that Rudy Gay, if he's healthy and they get him motivated, that I don't see the problem being with Rudy Gay. I'm more concerned with, I don't think there's a qualified backup point guard,
right,
or a combo guard. And if Lowry's out, as he has been, you know, in the prior 45 games, then there's a bigger problem.
Well, but that's, in essence, Butch, that's what I'm trying to get at, is you now have a glut in one position, the small forward position, and you have a dearth of talent, viable talent, at the point guard position. You also have Andrea Bargnani coming back at some point. Doesn't it suggest to you that maybe you have more than enough at the small forward position? Do you move one of those guys? Do you move Andrea? Would you even consider moving DeMar?
Well, I've been accused of getting in trouble for being a GM, so I just think that you have to have valuable pieces to move. I think Ed Davis's value was as high as it was ever going to be. I think that Jose had played his way to great value, and he has pieces that people will ask for, and he may have to combine one of those pieces to move something that, you know, that's not as desirable. So, but in reality, you know, we've won how many games? And that's not counting how many other games we should have won.
Well, yeah.
You know, we're behind. And when you're behind, you have to work harder and think smarter to catch up.
Right. Well, right? There's another factor in this, too. And yeah. I mean, I'm supposing something here, but you mentioned Jose. Yeah. So Calderon goes from Memphis to Detroit. Calderon's contract is up at the end of the year, becomes a free agent at the end of this season. Mm-hmm. It would not be the first time a guy left for a part of a season and then wound up coming back. But you wonder whether that's even in their plans, given that this is at least the third, maybe fourth trade that we've heard Jose was going to be a part of. So it seems clear that this management has been trying to move Jose Calderon or using him as a tool in the past. Do you think there's any chance he comes back at the end of the year? And does that then solve your guard problem?
Well, again, it depends on, you know, you have to solve your guard problem. You know, my concept would be you go after a combo guard instead of, you know, a pure point guard. Jose is very well respected. If he wanted to come back and it was the right number, you know, I'm pretty sure they would listen.
Right.
But Joe Dumars did a salary dump. You know, he gave Tayshaun Prince that large contract.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he dumped that contract on Memphis because at the age and where his team was at, he didn't feel it was in the best interest to pay that kind of money to Tayshaun. So, you know, I thought Detroit would be the last team because he's got the young point guard, you know, who played brilliantly three or four nights ago in Orlando, that, you know, he'd put Jose in there to confuse him, and he's got Will Bynum, and he's got Stuckey. So Joe's got the same problem at the 1-2 that we've got at the 3 position.
I get that, except he did take on an expiring contract, Coach.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct.
So while he has a problem, he only has a problem until April. And then he doesn't have that problem, and he has crap loads of cap space.
Yeah, he's loading up to do another deal, probably to move. And, you know, the question is, does he move Jose with one of the other pieces?
Right,
I don't think Jose's found his final resting spot.
Oh, you think he might move him before the trade deadline?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, he may need to move Jose to move something else.
Want to guess as to what else he wants to move?
No, I'm not. I've not studied it hard enough to guess, but
oh,
I mean,
okay. I got you.
You know, so, but I think that he's got the same logjam that we've got at a different position. And again, he's loading up for the summer, but Joe has been successful in signing guys through that were unwanted somewhere else. And knowing Joe, I think that's what he's getting ready to do.
When I sit down and try and I don't do it that often because mm-hmm. I get a headache, try and analyze this team and where they actually are. It's very difficult. You know, you had a 20 year old or whatever he was, center, who's out. You don't know what he is, and his development has now been stunted. You have a 7-footer in Bargnani. He's been out. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm having a hard time trying to get a handle on not where this team is, but what this team might be, where this team might be going. Nobody figures this is the end game right now, but I'm having a real hard time just trying to figure out where this goes, and I think the Rudy Gay acquisition, for me, only complicates things. What do you think of this team as you've watched them this year?
This team has struggled to understand possessions, key possessions in the quarter, in the half, in the game. Colangelo vetted about that when they came off the West Coast trip. It reared its head again in Atlanta.
Yeah.
One example, they have the last shot at the end of the second quarter. That shot should be taken with 1 or 2 seconds, so the other team has no chance.
Of course.
They take the shot early. They get fouled. They make the free throws. The other team calls timeout. Larry Drew draws up a great play, gets a layup. So now when you're yelling about a foul at the end of the game, if you don't give up those 2 points.
Well, I guess, yeah. You're right.
All right. You take at the end of the game, Larry Drew draws up a play and gets his team a layup. But, Bob, it's the same play he ran the prior game against the New York Knicks and got him a layup.
Must be a good play.
All right. Or someone's not watching film.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean.
All right. All right. I think Dwayne Casey is a very hardworking guy, and I think he's a good guy, and I wish him success here. But clearly, you go back and – they don't count possessions. And in the East, if you don't count possessions, all right, there's going to be enough games like last night. They should have stole that game. Atlanta wasn't ready to play. It was a stealable game.
Yep.
They come out in the third quarter and get smoked 30-14.
Something like that.
All right? So now they're behind the eight ball and led a team that they should have. And then you get to the end of the game and – I don't care what a guy says. He's been in the league 15 years, 20 years. To me, that's on preparation for the game. It's all horse crap. I went to NBA Films in Secaucus, New Jersey during our strike year, And I put my arm around a little intern that sits there and watches film all day and said, will you give me all of the in-the-game possessions over the last year where the team was down 4 points and won the game?
Okay.
All right. 2 days later, I get these discs, FedEx, call the guy, thank him, send him a thank you letter. All right. And I was able to, in 1 week, understand what I was supposed to do and what not to do. Because you take the examples of what all these teams have done.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And I don't see that kind of preparation from Dwayne's staff.
So you think this is less about the execution on the court and more about the preparation and the calling of plays?
Okay, so let's go to the Cleveland game, all right?
Mm-hmm, okay.
The Cleveland game, they get the ball with 36 seconds to go in the game. That means 2-for-1. You're going to get 2 shots at the other team's 1. Nope, they run their play. They run the clock down below the 24
seconds. Yeah, and then the other team runs it down.
Okay.
They never get
now,
it back. Yeah.
Right, so, okay, it happens once. But that's the same thing that happened in the Miami game at Miami.
Yeah.
Same thing. 30-something seconds, you go 2-for-1. They didn't go 2-for-1. So then LeBron's standing down there, last year's MVP, and he gets to take the last shot to try to beat you in a tie game.
Yep.
Then they go in overtime, and Miami shoots 75%, you know, and walks away with it.
Adios, yeah.
Right? So that's – look, Valasiunas is a talent. I don't mind him being hurt now. He doesn't need to play 80 games. Ross doesn't – you know, they're young kids.
Right.
All right? And Tracy McGrady, we played him the last 30 games of the year.
I get it.
Start – all right? Valasiunas should be competing for an all-star position in 3 years.
You think he's good enough?
All right.
Or he theoretically should be?
Theoretically, he's got the baseline of talent. He's got the fast twitch muscles. He's got great, great hands. He eats up everything that comes off the backboard. But, you know, Ed Davis had to go because Valasiunas has to have the time when he comes back.
Sure. All he has to get court time. Right.
Right. I think Ross is going to be a beast if he gets with the right coach. I think Ross can go left, can go right, but more importantly, he's one of the few people that can guard. He can naturally guard his position.
Right.
So if you can naturally guard your position, you can be a second or first team all defensive player.
Well, fascinating stuff, and all of analysis that comes out of this Rudy Gay trade and. Yeah, they certainly get you. You know, you don't win championships unless you have a stud. You can have five good guys, but you got to have a stud. And I guess the question is Rudy Gay the stud or not? And he's being paid like it, and many people thought he would be that. I think we're still waiting for him to raise the bar a little bit, but maybe in a new organization, Coach. Maybe with a new perspective. Go ahead.
Let's do this. Let's see how he lines up against Carmelo, all right? Because now all these guys he wasn't seeing on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's going to see a lot.
He's going to see. I think he's got it in him to dance with them. He's got a lot more of those guys on this side of the conference than he did on the other side. And hopefully for the Raps, he does.
It's always great to catch up with you and to hear your analysis of this great game. Thank you very much, as always, and we'll see you soon. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Butch Carter. Talk to him all day. 19 minutes past the hour. When we come back, CBS getting set to cover the Super Bowl. It's big money. It's a big event. What should the viewers expect? Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated joins us when primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
In a league under attack, where a 5-month war raged, one sport did what no one thought it could. Hockey defied the odds, and its greatness will fulfill its destiny. This season, rivalries are renewed. Hockey and Bodog unite. Capture every triumphant breakaway, goal, and battle on the boards with Bodog. Play with Bodog.net, your trusted source for sports odds and free online poker. Join Bodog today. It's Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow morning, 5:30 to 9. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
26 minutes past the hour. Primetime continues on the Fan and on Sportsnet. Later, Mike Sonics of the Phoenix Business Journal, our legal analyst Rob Becker from New York. Raptors president and general manager Brian Colangelo will talk about his trade yesterday. Don Banks of SI, Brad Fritch, PGA Tour member, will be with us. First, here's Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm all right. So, a few thousand will be sitting in the stadium in New Orleans, and several million will be watching on television, which means that the Super Bowl essentially is a television event and always has been a television event. It's how most people will have always and will always absorb the sport. For those of us that had the opportunity to watch on TV or to be in the stadium, I prefer to be in front of my television set. But I wonder if sometimes, because it's the Super Bowl, and we feel the need to analyze every little detail of every little thing that goes on, are we in danger of overanalyzing the television coverage? Isn't it basically going to be a football game?
Well, I mean, we overanalyze everything.
Well,
say, where does it end? Should it end? I mean, you know, your station will probably overanalyze the power play of the Maple Leafs next week.
There's no question.
And that's not a criticism. And this is what we do in sports. The broadcast is an extension of the game. And I think we're at a place now where there are so many outlets, so much space, obviously, on the web, so many niche places, that I think everything's up for evaluation, whether it's the performance of Jim Nantz and the production crew to the performance of Michael Crabtree and Colin Kaepernick.
So what do you think we're going to see on Sunday that will be unique, will be compelling, will create water cooler talk on Monday morning? What are you most looking forward to?
You know, the interesting thing about a Super Bowl broadcast, and I talked to the producer and director this week, sat on a couple conference calls with Nantz and Sims, and viewers usually remember a broadcast, or I should say how they think about a broadcast, is almost always dictated by the game. So if it's an exciting game, if it's a thrilling game, people usually come away from the broadcast pretty satisfied. If it's a blowout, not that they're critical of the broadcast, but the broadcast doesn't become that memorable. So I'm not sure I'm expecting anything new or so memorable on the broadcast. I think that it's a pretty stock announcing crew. CBS has a specific way of doing the game. Usually, if something crazy happens, like we get a Beyonce, halftime wardrobe malfunction, or a camera person misses, or CBS doesn't have an angle on the biggest play of the game, that could be talked about. But in all honesty, you know, and this is sort of, CBS is pretty conservative here, so they generally are not ones to bring out the most gigantic bells and whistles. I expect it to just be a very well-produced, high-quality broadcast, but not necessarily any different than any broadcast we've seen from CBS during the playoffs.
The pregame show technically starts at 2 p.m., right? The live pregame show.
The live show does, but CBS will, I mean, if you want to count all the pregames, the first pregame will be 7 a.m.
Nice.
For the NFL Network First on the Field.
Right.
CBS has a show at 11, 12, and 1, special on New Orleans, a Phil Simms special, and an NFL film special. But, yeah, they're going from 2 to 6 live, and, you know, I would expect the Super Bowl pregame to be similar to pregames in the past, a mix of entertainment and information, a lot of features, a lot of, chucklehead laughter from the guys on the set laughing at everybody's jokes. It's basically your traditional pregame show, but on steroids, as well as an entertainment component.
Do the ratings, as you understand it, warrant a 4.5-hour pregame show?
Well, I would say yeah, because you're getting so many people to watch on that Sunday, whether they're just sitting around at a party. I mean, there's so much. Essentially, it is a holiday. It's a television holiday.
No, I get
that. So while it seems crazy that, yeah, you know, why would you start its pregame show at 2 o'clock? Well, that pregame show at 2 o'clock is going to triple whatever college basketball game you might put on that day. Or it's going to triple if you're CBS. In fact, CBS does have college basketball. You know, it's going to triple whatever CBS inventory would be on there. So, yeah, you absolutely go for that because you can sell against that. You're going to make more money on your ads.
Right.
And I think now, right or wrong, there's become this expectation that there has to be a gigantic pregame show. It's sort of become part of the show, even if the show gets a little ridiculous at times.
So if you're not at the game, are you watching the you watch? Do you go to a party usually? Do you have a party or have a party?
Yeah, I go to a party, Bob.
Okay.
I just love that dead question. No, Bob, I gotta watch. I'm writing the next day.
So
I'm evaluating.
So you're not. You
so
don't.
I'm in
your office.
House. Hopefully, my wife will hang out with me. Maybe, but
right. But you're by yourself.
But I gotta pay. I gotta take notes. I gotta pay attention.
Right.
I'm not having any fun. I'm. You know. This is work, baby.
Okay. So because I don't have to take it that way, I do have the opportunity, and we usually have a Super Bowl party. And here's
good.
What I'll tell
I'm
you.
I'm happy for that.
Here's what I'll tell you.
Well, I hope you invite your producers, and don't be one of these big-time radio guys who doesn't invite the behind-the-scenes guys.
Oh, I can't get rid of them. They're at the house all the time, begging for crumbs and stuff at the back door.
From what I heard, they're working the party. They're serving.
Would you care for another cheese doodle? So, but here's the interesting thing. So we used to have this party, and the game starts at about, 6:30-ish, right? So we used to 3 o'clock, come at 3 o'clock. And nobody paid any attention. Big-ass TV is on. Nobody pays any attention until the game starts, or maybe a bit before. So we pushed it back to 4, then we pushed it back to 5. This year, 6 o'clock, come at 6. Now, I think I'm more the norm in terms of my viewing habits than you are. Most people aren't sequestered in a smelly little room, hermetically sealed, with the rest of the world locked out, so they can focus clearly enough to be able to write.
Well, I'm not the Unabomber. I'm not in a basement watching it. I mean,
well, it certainly sounds like
I'm in my dining room. It's a beautiful TV. It's cool. But yeah,
right.
I'm the first to admit that I'm going to be watching pretty closely from 2 to 6, and I am at the absolute outlier of this. I would hope that people aren't
right.
So glued to the set from 2 to 6 like I am, because I think you'd lose your mind.
Yeah, and I guess that is where I was getting at, is this is the part of this show that I don't totally understand, unless it is nothing more than self-defined hype, where the network feels, and we didn't always have like 12-hour pregame shows before championship football games. Hell, I can remember when we didn't, when like maybe it was a half-hour show or an hour show, maybe an hour minimum, but not much more than that. And now, as you said, granted, on the NFL Network, they're going to start at 7 a.m. They're going to start almost 12 hours ahead of time. And I just wonder what the merit in that is. And, I mean, you observe this stuff for a living. Do you see, is there merit in doing this? Or is it overkill?
But, I mean, I would say it depends on what, you know, is the merit, are you judging the merit like from CBS? Because the argument is, I mean, it's not even an argument, is that there's absolutely merit on their end, because as I said, they're going to get tune in. Is there merit based on news value? I would say no. I mean, I think 4 hours is excessive in terms of, at that point, the amount of news. But this isn't about that. This is about a show. And you know, they would argue, and financially and correctly so in this end, that the pregame is part of the extravaganza, and it brings you, it makes the day feel that much bigger. I will say this, Bob, you know, and this probably won't stun you, but it is stunning to think about. If the NFL Network ever got the Super Bowl, and this is not going to happen in our lifetime, but if they did, they would start at 6 a.m. I'm positive about this.
Yeah.
And they would give you a 12-hour pregame show.
Right.
I am sure of that. So under their charter, they would say, they might even do a 24-hour pregame show. I'm being totally serious. Like, they would say there you can't have enough pregame.
Oh, no, I've been around this business long enough to know that there is no shortage of mindless, stupid executives in this business.
Right, right.
Who can justify almost any decision that they make just with a wave of their finger. But it doesn't make it right, and it doesn't mean it's the right thing, the correct thing to do from either a business perspective or
and again, I'm generally agree with you on a lot of stuff, but can I not make the argument that as a viewer or we both of us do have a choice? And if we want at 2 o'clock, we can either go outside.
Oh, you're
right. If we want at 2 o'clock, we could put the BBC on.
No, and I can tell you what I'm going to be watching leading up to the Super Bowl, because for the last couple of years, I've done it. I'm going to watch that golf tournament in Arizona where they have the wacky par three hole with the stands all around it and everybody boos.
Right.
That's what I'm going to watch.
It was interesting. They don't really do this anymore, but there was a time, I want to say it was the early 90s or maybe the mid 90s, where there was some specific counter programming against the Super Bowl pregame show, if you remember. Whether it was, I don't feel like it was golf, but, you know, I mean, it got stupid to the point of the lingerie bowl, but didn't they do like a dog show?
I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember, but I thought that other networks, at least if nothing else, took the shot between the 2 and 6,
right,
that, hey, we're not going to cede this ground to the Super Bowl broadcaster. We're going to try to beat them in the pregame.
I don't honestly remember. It rings a bell with me, but I can't help you on the specifics.
Yeah, maybe something counter would be like if you're like an NBC or something like that. You go, hey, let's try to put something really cool on there. But here's the deal. If you do that, then the next year Fox and CBS are going after you. So it's almost like a gentleman's agreement that, hey, we're not going to screw with your biggest day of the year.
Brett Favre's going to show up on television. Is this an audition, or is this just a one-off for him?
An audition for what? I think that Favre is a guy who I don't know if he wants to be on TV full-time, but if he can get a cushy kind of gig, I think he would like to do some kind of television. So I don't know if this is an audition. Maybe in that sense it is. I don't think he has to audition, though, Bob. I think Brett Favre
probably
is famous enough where if he wants to work on the NFL Network in some capacity, he's got an easy job. I think ESPN would probably hire him as well. CBS, Fox, a little higher profile, I'm not sure. But I think the guy is just so famous that somebody would put him on the air just because I think there's, like you said, there's an executive out there who would believe – that out, we put Brett Favre on, and people are going to tune in to see what he has to say, whether that's true or not.
Last point. Almost assuredly, the most unique thing about this game is the fact that you have the brothers Harbaugh on opposing sidelines, something that we have not seen in the Super Bowl and are not likely to see again unless it's these two guys. This is indeed a rarity. How do you take advantage of that? How do you expose that? What could CBS do to make this more of a storyline than it obviously is going to be? Have they got plans?
Well, they have a feature planned in the pregame, and it's a sit-down with the brothers, and I know they talk about growing up and their parents. And
that's boring. Anything else?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'll sort of give you sort of what I know. I know during the game – they've got isolated cameras on both, and I would expect throughout the game for replays to show how they're reacting to stuff. But where I think you'll find the most interesting thing, ironically enough, about the broadcast involving the Harbaughs is after the game, is what that scene is like when they meet at midfield, because that's going to be your money shot. In newspapers and magazines around the country, people are going to want to know what they said to each other, if they say anything to each other. So, weirdly enough, I think the most interesting thing about them comes at the end of the game, when they actually have to when they have to meet each other, and when one brother has basically won the biggest game of his life, and one brother has lost the biggest game of his life.
Okay, so what if the losing brother disses the other one and doesn't shake his hand?
Well, listen, that's not going to happen, but if it did,
that would be a
major sports story and would be the talk of sports radio on Monday.
See, if I'm them, just for chuckles and giggles, I'd set that up in advance, no matter who wins.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm with you, and my subversiveness would love that.
Yes.
But I think if you're the one who gets beat, you're going to be, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
All bets are off because you're just probably going to be kicked off at the result.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that the guy's your brother, I mean, an hour later, 2 hours later, that'll mean something. 30 seconds after the gun goes off, I don't think so much. He's just the other coach whose butt you were trying to kick for the last 3 hours and failed. So.
I will say this, though. Watch that scrum, and I think your listeners should watch it, because that is going to – you want to talk about, like, the Roman Colosseum.
Yeah.
That scene is going to be absurd with all the photographers – cameramen trying to get to the middle of that field. That I actually would not be surprised if somebody goes down and gets hurt, because there are going to be so many people stampeding for that moment.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're going to have 12 hours of television, and the money shot is going to be that one, 30 seconds after the game's over. Richard,
right.
Thanks, pal, and enjoy your solitude on Sunday afternoon at the dining room table. And if you get too bored, give me a call. Come on over, because we'll be having a hell of a party.
I need a flight. I'll be there in an hour and a half.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. We'll come back and tell you what's coming up when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
In a league under attack, where a five-month war raged, one sport did what no one thought it could. Hockey defied the odds, and its greatness will fulfill its destiny. This season, rivalries are renewed. Hockey and Bodog unite. Capture every triumphant breakaway, goal, and battle on the boards with Bodog. Play with Bodog.net, your trusted source for sports odds and free online poker. Join Bodog today.
Leafs and Capitals, tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, the longer you follow this Phoenix Coyotes story, the more cautious you become in trying to make predictions as to what's going to happen and how things are going to unfold. This Greg Jamieson character who's, trying to put a group together to purchase the Phoenix Coyotes for reasons that I've never been able to explain. Well, they're down to the 11th hour, and the city has a January 31st midnight deadline, which this is January 31st. And has this guy got the group, or he's got the do-re-mi? What kind of a deal is this? And if this thing falls through, and I'm not even here to tell you that I know that it's whether it is, it will or it won't fall through, whether today is or isn't the deadline. But what's the next step? If Jamieson walks away or throws up his hands and says he can't get the deal he wants, or the city says we're tired of waiting, what the hell is the next play? Where do you go from here? If at some point, don't you have to move this thing? Don't you? Mike Sonics will join us from the Phoenix Business Journal. A ruling has come down in the United States that opens the door for NCAA athletes to claim their share of revenues from television contracts. It's interesting, but it might not be quite as simple as it appears. We'll address that subject with Rob Becker, our legal analyst, will join us via Skype from New York. Brian Colangelo shook things up in Raptor land yesterday with his trade for small forward Rudy Gay from Memphis. Rudy Gay will make between $16 and $19 million over the next 3 years, a total of in excess of $53 million in his next 3 years, assuming he stays with the Toronto Raptors. He is a player that is being paid like one of the superstars, but quite frankly, historically, his performance has been a notch below that of a superstar. This is a guy who can play, a guy who some have said needs to be motivated, and anytime that word of motivation comes up, I get nervous. We'll see what Brian Colangelo was thinking when he made this deal, and is he concerned about an unmotivated Rudy Gay coming to Toronto? Don Banks of Sports Illustrated from the Super Bowl, and PGA Tour member Brad Fritch. Three events, three cuts made. That ain't all bad. John Shannon wanders in here. Primetime will continue in a couple of minutes on The Fan and Sportsnet.